grainy image of a modified Lux 400 yacht took shape, green hyphens of laser fire erupting from the ship's well-concealed lateral cannons. "Do we have the transponder signature of that vessel?" Tarkin asked.
"The truant, sir," the tech said, "on the wanted list in several sectors for arms smuggling."
"Draw a bead on it," Tarkin commanded. The spec relayed the command into her headset, then glanced up at him. "Our gunners report they're having difficulty finding a clear shot because of the lifeboats and the debris field." Tarkin fumed.
"Acquire it and open fire!"
He turned his attention to the screens as turbo laser beams from the Star Destroyer's starboard side turrets found the Lux 400, and it vanished in a short-lived fireball.
"The truant is no longer on the wanted list, sir. Minimal collateral casualties."
Tarkin strode forward on the walkway to the primary data pit. "Have you confined the rest of those ships?"
"They're not going anywhere, sir, and Lord Vader's picket is currently closing on the group. Still no sign of the carrion spike."
"Do the sensors detail any instances of ships jumping to light speed?"
"None, sir. No instances of Kronau radiation. Though the interdiction field would make that a long shot in any case."
Tarkin shook his head in bewilderment. Had the shipjackers had a last-moment change of plans? Or had they been forewarned?
"Is the homing beacon still transmitting?"
The tech attended to his various instruments.
No signal from the tracker, sir. Nothing.
So they had discovered it. But when?
Tarkin continued to move forward until he was standing just short of the viewports, just short of the chaos beyond.
Vader's voice fractured his introspection.
"Which vessel appeared first?"
"The YT-1000 freighter," Tarkin said.
"Then we'll begin with that one, since it arrived closest to the projected arrival time of the carrion spike."
"Begin what, Lord Vader?"
"The failure of the corvette to appear does not owe to any impromptu change of plans, Governor. The dissidents are trying to throw us off the scent, and I intend to search each interdicted ship until we have answers."
Tarkin watched the picket accelerate as Vader made haste for the immobilized antique, ignoring the flaming hulk of the passenger liner and the scattering of lifeboats and escape pods to all sides. Tarkin let his gaze become unfocused, so that the stars and the strewn ships lost all definition. His thoughts returned to the plateau and the lessons he had learned. Sometimes, especially when he, Jova, and the others had gone without food for several days, and despite their best efforts to stalk faultlessly, an elusive hunt took on such desperation that the importance of thinking like the prey was abandoned. Vader was correct. The dissidents hadn't had a last-moment change of plans. Early on, they were aware of the trap being set for them. Creatures understood themselves to be most vulnerable during flight and evasion. That's when they paid strict attention to warnings issued by other animals. Fleeing for their lives, they picked up scents on the wind. They sharpened their senses, granting themselves the ability to hear and see their pursuers at great distances. They took all advantage of knowing the territory better than the ones chasing them. The savannas and jungled areas of the plateau would perk up when Jova and his band were about, because they were the intruders and usually up to no good. His loathing and frustration notwithstanding, Tarkin could respect the dissidents for their cleverness and foresight. But clearly their plan had been hatched with the aid of Confederates, and those allies were now beginning to play their part in keeping the carrion spike from being reclaimed. Tarkin had lost all sense of how long he had been standing in the viewport bay when Vader's fury brought him back to the moment.
"This freighter is to be tractored aboard the Executrix for a thorough inspection. The crew is to be kept in detention until I'm through interrogating them."
Thank you. Chapter 18. Hung upside down. Vader stood ominously motionless in the illuminated cargo hold of the YT freighter, breathing deeply and looking as if he was ready to draw his lightsaber and cut everything around him to shreds. Tarkin, too, thought it unlikely they were going to discover anything of interest among the haphazardly stacked shipping crates, but he was willing to have a look nonetheless. The foul-smelling and disheveled old ship sat in the glare of spotlights in one of the Star Destroyer's ancillary hangars, like some stultified and wary insect. Circular in design, with an outrigger cockpit sandwiched between a pair of rectangular mandibles, the Reticent had seen better days a century earlier, and was now barely spaceworthy. The cargo ramp beneath the cockpit had been lowered, and glow rods set up inside and out to flood the hold with light. Vader and Tarkin's cursory search had revealed consignments of tools, medical supplies, bolts of fabric, trays of gaudy costume jewelry, tankfuls of alcoholic beverages, and droid parts. Recording devices and scanners in hand, Lieutenant Crest and two other stormtroopers, all three without helmets or armored plastrons, were following Vader and Tarkin as they nosed around. The Reticent was the only ship to have been sequestered following the catastrophe at the edge of Obroa Sky space. The rest that had fallen victim to the faulty interdiction field had been checked out and allowed to go on their way, which for most of them meant directly to the system's namesake planet for repairs, after collisions with escape pods and debris from the wrecked Mon Cal Starcruiser. That ship, and the detainer, had also been towed to Obroa Sky, with the death toll from the crash estimated at 1,100 beings. The state-of-the-art immobilizer, whose fail-safes had malfunctioned, had been returned to Corellian Engineering for reassessment. Legitimate holovids of the events had flooded the holonet, most of them cammed by passengers aboard the luxury liner, and by media teams who had received word from unidentified sources of an Imperial operation taking place at the periphery of the star system. As for Carrion Spike, she had yet to turn up in any system. By the time the task force's fastest frigate had reached Thustra, Tarkin's rogue ship had already jumped to unknown space. Crest was reading from a datapad. "The ship's identification signature doesn't appear to have been altered. It hasn't even changed names in decades. The crew acquired it 3 years back from a dealer on Lantilles. The itinerary we sliced from the Navi computer corroborates the captain's story. They jumped from Taris to Thustra to pick up replacement parts for a fleet of Sephi flyers that was sold in bulk at the end of the war to an Obroa Sky emergency medevac center." "How was the pickup and delivery arranged?" Tarkin asked. "Through a broker on Lantilles, maybe the same dealer in pre-owned ships. He gets a line on what's needed, when and where, and dispatches crews to make the transfers."
"The Reticent's crew are freelance operators?"
Crest nodded. "They describe themselves as itinerant merchants."
"Where were they bound after Obroa Sky?"
Vader wanted to know.
"To Nab," Crest said. "To buy foodstuffs. Parties at Thustra, Obroa Sky, and Tanab have substantiated all this."
"And the communications aboard?" Tarkin asked.
Crest turned to him. "It isn't set up to record incoming or outgoing transmissions, but the log checks out, at least in terms of supporting the captain's claims about who contacted them and where the freighter was at the time."
Vader scanned the hold as if in search of something unspecified.
"How long did they spend at Thustra?"
3 hours, Lord Vader."
Vader glanced at Tarkin.
"What, I wonder, was their rush?"
Tarkin considered it.
"Apparently the goods, the flyer replacement parts, were already crated and waiting for them. The med center on Obroa Sky had requested that they expedite the delivery." He fell briefly silent. "The Reticent's hyperdrive is vastly inferior to that of the Carrion Spike. No better than a Class 5, I would imagine. That means that even though they arrived in the Obroa Sky system at almost precisely the moment we were expecting the Carrion Spike,
The reticent had to have gone to hyperspace much sooner than the carrion spike would have. The timing could owe to nothing more than coincidence. But one question to ask is just what the dissidents were doing in the Thustra system for so many hours.
Vader had swung abruptly to Tarkin on the word coincidence, and now the Dark Lord was in motion, pushing crates aside as he stormed about, without actually touching any of them.
This ship rendezvoused with the carrion spike. I'm certain of it.
Tarkin threw Crest a questioning look.
If so, Lord Vader, the stormtrooper said, there's no evidence of the ships linking up, no evidence in the comm board showing intership communication, and no evidence in the docking ring's airlock memory showing that the reticent was umbilical to another ship.
Vader took a moment to reply, and when he did, it was to pose a question to Tarkin.
Why would the dissidents elect to send us a ship in any case?
Tarkin smiled faintly, aware that the question was rhetorical.
To throw us off the scent, if I recall your phrase correctly. To give us plenty to deal with while they're busy making plans to strike elsewhere.
Vader turned and proceeded to the cargo hold ramp.
Let us see what the captain of this scrap heap has to say for himself. You are not an itinerant merchant, Captain,
Vader said, gesticulating with his right hand.
You are in league with a group of dissidents intent on destroying military installations as a means of undermining the sovereignty of the Empire.
A Korovar with a long cranial horn, the reticent's naked and shackled captain, was suspended a meter overhead, captive of a containment field produced by a device whose prototype had been manufactured on Geonosis long before the war. As far as Tarkin knew, the Executrix was the only capital ship in the Imperial fleet to have such an appliance, which created and maintained the field by means of disc-like generators bolted to the deck and to the ceiling directly above. The detention center's version of prisoner interdiction, the field required that the detainee wear magnetic cuffs that not only anchored him in place, but also monitored life signs. Too powerful a field could stop a being's heart or cause irreversible brain damage. As well, and as if the field itself weren't enough, the cuffs could be used as torture devices, capable of unleashing powerful electrical charges. Vader, however, had no need to utilize the cuffs. His dark powers had the captain writhing in pain.
Lord Vader, Tarkin said, we should at least give him an opportunity to respond.
Reluctantly, Vader lowered his hand, and the Korovar's ridged facial features relaxed in cautious relief.
I'm a merchant, and nothing more, he managed to say. Torture me as you must, but it won't change the fact that we came to Obroaskai on business.
The business of conspiracy,
Vader said.
The business of sabotage.
The Korovar shook his head weakly.
The business of buying and selling. That is what we do, and only what we do.
He paused.
Not all of us were separatists.
Tarkin smiled to himself. It was true. Not all Korovar population centers and worlds had thrown in with Dooku. Nor had all Cymerthians, a pair of which made up the rest of the crew. But why would the captain say that?
Why do you make a point of stating that fact, Captain?
He asked. The Korovar's bleary eyes found him.
The Empire demands retribution for the war, and so it lumps the innocent with the guilty, and holds all of us responsible.
Responsible for what, Captain? Do you believe that the Separatists were wrong to secede from the Republic?
I move about to keep from having to decide who is right and who is wrong.
A being without a home world, Tarkin said, as your species was once without a planet.
I'm telling you the truth.
You're lying,
Vader countered,
admit that you swore allegiance to the Separatist Alliance, and that you and your current allies are the ones seeking retribution.
The Korovar squeezed his eyes closed, anticipating pain Vader opted not to deliver. Tell me about the broker who provides you with leads, Tarkin said.
Knots, a human who works out of Lentilis. Contact him. He'll verify everything I've been telling you.
He helped you procure the reticent?
He loaned us the credits, yes.
And you've been in his employ for 3 years?
Not in his employ. We're freelance. He provides jobs to several crews, and we accept jobs from several brokers.
How did you originally find your way to a human broker on Lentilis?
An advert of some sort. I don't recall precisely.
This time, he instructed you to travel from Taris to Thustra.
Yes.
A rush job, Tarkin surmised.
The Med Center relies on its Cephi flyers for medical evacuations.
So, in and out, Tarkin said. No interaction with anyone other than the provider.
No interaction. Exactly as you say.
And no ship-to-ship interaction.
There was no need. The supplies were groundside on Thustra.
Tarkin circled the Korovar. In your recent travels, have you seen holovids of attacks launched against Imperial facilities?
We try to ignore the media.
Clueless as well as homeless, Tarkin said. Is that it? The captain sneered at him.
Guilty as charged.
Tarkin traded glances with Vader. An interesting turn of phrase, Captain, Tarkin said. Vader loosed a sound that approximated a growl.
We are not in some Coruscant courtroom, Governor. Questions of this sort are useless.
You'd prefer to break him with pain?
If need be. Unless, of course, you object.
Vader's menacing tone rolled off Tarkin. I suspect that our captain will go insane long before he breaks. But I also agree that we're wasting our time. The longer we spend here, the greater the chance that the carrion spike will elude us entirely. He watched the Korovar peripherally as he said it. Vader looked directly at the captain.
Yes, this one is stronger than he looks. And he is not innocent. I want more time with him. For all we know, the dissidents abandoned your ship at Thustra and transferred to the YT freighter. He may be one of them.
Then someone else must have the carrion spike, as there was no sign of her there. Tarkin glanced at the captain a final time and forced an exhalation. I'll leave you to your work, Lord Vader. The Korovar's anguished screams accompanied him down the long corridor that led to the detention center's turbo lifts. Teller found Honora in the Corvette's darkened cockpit, swiveling absently in one of the chairs, her bare feet crossed atop the instrument console. Salik and the others were resting, as was the carrion Spike, a slave to sundry deep space gravities.
We're almost done, he said, sinking into an adjacent chair.
Her face fell.
There has to be a more comforting way of saying that.
He frowned at her.
You're the writer.
Yes, but you're talking, not writing.
His frown only deepened.
You know what I mean.
One more jump and on to the serious business. Her eyes searched his face.
And then?
All he could do was shrug.
With luck,
live to fight another day. She closed her eyes and shook her head.
With luck. There you go again, qualifying every answer.
He didn't know how else to put it, how not to qualify his remarks. In thinking about it, he recalled having made almost the same comment when the reticent had jumped for a Broa Sky. With any luck, Tarkin and Vader will dismiss the ship's arrival as coincidental, and the crew will simply be questioned and released. But that wasn't what happened. The Imperials had seen through the ruse. The ship had been impounded, and the crew had been arrested. Word was that neither Tarkin nor Vader had been able to glean much information from them, but Teller doubted that Tarkin would leave it at that. Tarkin wouldn't rest until he rooted out connections, and once he did, well, by then it would be too late.
With any luck?
The update on the situation at Obroa Sky had also included a piece of good news. The Corvette's crew had been given a target to attack, which had saved him the trouble of having to choose one from among increasingly bad options. The objective was another Imperial facility rather than some more significant objective, but Teller could live with that. No one aboard the Carrion Spike nursed any delusions about winning a war against the Empire single-handedly. They were merely contributing to what Teller hoped would one day grow into a cause. That, and avenging themselves for what each of them had had to bear. Payback for atrocities the Empire had committed, which had inspired them to come together as a group. "Nice of you to give Carla the privilege of destroying the homing beacon," Honora said.
"He earned it."
Honora put her feet on the cool deck, yawned, and stretched her thin, dark arms over her head.
"When do we go?"
Teller glanced at the console's cron display.
"We've still got a couple of hours."
"Do you trust your contact entirely?"
Teller rocked his head.
"I'd say, up to a point. He's convinced that he has as much to gain as we do."
Honora grinned faintly.
"I was expecting you to add, or lose."
"It was implied."
"Any compassion for our stand-ins at Obroa Sky?"
Teller exhaled in disappointment.
"Oh, not you too."
"I'm only asking."
"They knew the risks,"
Teller said, straight-faced. Honora took a long moment to respond.
"I know I sound like Hask, but maybe I'm just not cut out for this, Teller."
She eyed him askance.
"It was never an ambition of mine to be a revolutionary."
He snorted.
"I don't buy it. You were fighting the good fight in your own way long before I met you. With words, anyway."
She smiled without showing her teeth.
"Not quite the same as firing laser cannons at other beings, or letting strangers take the fall for you."
He studied her.
"You know, I'm actually surprised to hear you talk like this. You practically jumped at the chance to get involved."
She nodded.
"I won't deny it. But since we're being honest with each other, I may have been thinking of it more as a career move."
"Fame and fortune."
"I guess. And like our stand-ins, I knew the risk. But I underestimated Compnor and the Emperor."
"His reach."
"Not just his reach."
Her face grew serious.
"His power. His barbarity."
"You're not the only one who underestimated him."
Honora glanced toward the command center hatch and lowered her voice.
"I still feel bad about dragging Hask into this."
Teller shrugged.
"We could always drop her off somewhere."
Honora's eyes searched his face.
"Really?"
"Sure.
If that's what she wants."
"Should I ask her?"
"Go ahead. I'll give you odds she says no."
Honora laughed shortly.
"I think you're right."
She fell silent, then said,
"Are we going to win, Teller?"
He reached out to clap her gently on the shoulder.
"We're winning so far, aren't we?"
The subsurface Sith Shrine wasn't the sole area in the palace where the dark side of the Force was strong. Rooms and corridors throughout the lower level still bore traces of the resentful fury Darth Vader had unleashed in the final days of the Clone Wars. In one such room, a human and a Korriban knelt in separate pools of ruthless light trained on them from hidden sources in the vaulted ceiling. To Darth Sidious, however, they were not so much living beings as whirlpools in the befuddled waters he had been negotiating since the cache of communications gear found on Mercana had been brought to his attention. Obstacles he needed to maneuver past in order to reach an untroubled stretch of current. Sidious occupied a simple chair well removed from the twin pools of light, the droid 114D off to one side and slightly behind him, Vizier Mos Amida close at hand as well. Opposite him, across the barren room, a pair of royal guards flanked the carved stone doorway. The Korovar, Brachia, was an imperial intelligence asset assigned to Mercana. The human, Stellan, the Korovar's security bureau case officer stationed on Coruscant. Sidious already knew all he needed to about their separate backgrounds and records of service. He sought nothing more than to observe them through the Force, and to evaluate their responses to a few simple questions.
Korovar, he said from the chair, you served the Republic during the war, and more recently you provided some assistance to Lord Vader and Governor Tarkin on Mokana.
Light reflected off the Korovar's spiral horn as he lifted his head a bit.
I helped them rid Mercana of arms smugglers, my lord.
So it seems. But tell us what you told them at the time about your initial survey of the holonet jamming devices.
My lord, I stated that I did not chance upon the devices on my own. Nor was I cognizant of any rumors indicating that such a cache existed in Mercana City. I was merely executing a directive I received from Coruscant.
Viewing him through the Force, Sidious saw the eddying waters began to relax and surrender themselves to the current.
Case officer,
he said to Stellan.
By Coruscant, he means you, does he not?
Yes, my lord. The investigation was carried out at my request.
A thick-set human man of indeterminate age, he had brown wavy hair and large ears set low on a blockish head.
Then tell us how you came to learn of this cache.
The man lifted his nondescript face to the light, squinting and blinking in puzzlement.
My lord, forgive me. I assumed you were aware that the information was provided to ISB by military intelligence.
Sidious's pulse quickened. Instead of smoothing out, the hydraulic tightened on itself and began to spin more rapidly, as if summoning Sidious to follow the swirling funnel beneath the surface to whatever irregularity below had given rise to it. It may as well have been the dark side that rasped.
Explain this.
Humbling himself, the case officer lowered his head.
My lord, military intelligence was in the process of conducting an inventory of caches of armaments, vehicles, and supplies that had been left abandoned during the war on a host of contested worlds, from Raxus all the way to Utapau. In the case of the holonet jamming devices, MI wasn't certain if the cache had been on Mercana for several years, or if it was of more recent origin, and worthy, therefore, of further investigation. Given that an investigation of that sort fell outside its purview, MI relayed the matter to Imperial Security.
To you,
Sidious said.
Yes, my lord.
I received a crude holovid that showed the devices.
A holovid? Cammed by someone in military intelligence?
That was my assumption, my lord. I didn't see the need to pursue the matter, nor did the deputy director. We simply instructed Brachia to conduct a survey.
Sidious thought back to the initial briefing that had taken place in the audience chamber. Defending ISB's apprehensions that the jammers could be used to spread anti-imperial propaganda, Deputy Director Eisen had wondered aloud why naval intelligence was suddenly so troubled by the cache, when on first learning of it, they had expressed no such concerns. None of the admirals, not Rancid, Screed, nor any of the others, had replied to Eisen's question. Without taking his eyes from the case officer, Sidious said in a low voice,
Droid, locate this holovid sent by military intelligence to ISB.
114D extended its interface arm into an access port behind Sidious's chair. After a long silence, the droid said,
Your Majesty, I find no record of a holovid.
As I suspected, Sidious said. But you will find it in ISB's archives.
Another moment passed before 114D said,
Yes, Your Majesty. The holovid is archived.
And when projected, Sidious thought, it would show corruption of a telltale sort, because the holovid was counterfeit, faked by someone with access to Imperial codes and to devices capable of subverting the holonet. Deep beneath the surface he had found the irregularities responsible for the turbulence above. And it was apparent now that they were closer at hand than even he had realized.
Chapter 19. Footprints. In the most secluded of the Executrix's several tactical rooms, Tarkin closed myriad programs running on the immense battle analysis holotable and entered a restricted Imperial code that tasked the projector to interface with the holonet. He then submitted himself to a series of biometric scans that allowed him to access a multitude of top-secret Republic and Imperial databases situated on Coruscant. He had already issued orders that he was not to be disturbed, but he double-checked that the door had sealed behind him and that the tactical room security cams were offline. He called for the illumination to dim, set himself atop a tall, castered stool within easy reach of the table's complex controls, and allowed his thoughts to unwind. The Star Destroyer was holding at Obroa Sky, awaiting redeployment orders from Coruscant now that the Emperor had given Vice Admiral Rancid command of the task force created to capture or destroy the Carrion Spike. Only a few hours earlier, the dissidents had attacked an Imperial facility at Noain, a client state system in the Inner Rim. To Tarkin, the dissidents' choice of targets seemed as illogical as would have been their showing up at Obroa Sky. But with major systems becoming so heavily reinforced, perhaps the choice merely reflected the fact that their options were dwindling. At Noain, the rogue ship had been prevented from inflicting serious damage and had nearly become a fatality. The win had gone to Rancid, who through a painstaking process of elimination had predicted where the Carrion Spike would strike and had dispatched a flotilla in advance of the corvette's arrival. Even stealth had failed to allow the corvette to evade a continuous onslaught of long-range lasers. From what Tarkin had been given to understand, there was good reason to believe that the Carrion Spike had sustained heavy damage before a last-ditch retreat to hyperspace. The rumor mill had it that Rancid's assignment, some called it a promotion, was an indication of the Emperor's disappointment with Tarkin. But Vader had assured Tarkin that the Emperor was merely trying to free him from having to wear too many hats. Tarkin was to leave the chase to others for the time being and devote himself instead to ascertaining the dissident's ultimate objective. And so he was. When stalking game on the plateau, Jova would tell him that a careful study of prints on a trail could reveal not only the species of animal that had left them, but also the animal's intentions. With a flourish of input at the holotable's keypad, Tarkin created an open field above the table and instructed the computer to render his voice into lines of text and place them in order in the field. Then he turned slightly in the direction of the nearest audio pickup. Access to confiscated warship modules, separatist weapons, and holonet interruptors, either through salvagers, crime syndicates, or other sources, he began. The ability to make use of purchased or pirated separatist technology. The ability to transmit real-time holovids through the holonet. And the ability to create and transmit counterfeit holovids by accessing public holonet archives and other media sources. Knowledge of the existence of Rampart and Sentinel bases. Knowledge of Lieutenant Thorne's assignment to Rampart Base. Knowledge of the existence of the Carrion Spike. And familiarity with her sophisticated systems. A crew of spacers conversant with Imperial procedures and with a knowledge of Imperial facilities. Possible assistance from Imperial assets with high clearance. One by one, the lines of text appeared in the field, and Tarkin studied them for a long moment, his elbow planted on his raised left knee and his chin cupped in his hand.
Vader's interrogation of the reticent's crew members hadn't resulted in anything more than heart failure for the freighter's Cymerthian navigator. However, as a recompense of sorts, the Dark Lord had received a significant piece of information from one of his sources inside the Crimora. A lieutenant in the crime syndicate claimed to have negotiated a deal with Faza, the Sugi smuggler on Mercana, for a supply of custom fuel cells, which had been shipped to the planet shortly before Tarkin and Vader's arrival. This, in itself, wasn't entirely surprising, considering that the Carrion Spike's stop at the Findar fuel tanker was evidence enough that the dissidents had added fuel to the ship before absconding with her. What was surprising was that the deal for the fuel cells had been arranged through an agent on Lantilles, whom Tarkin suspected was the same human the captain of the Reticent had named as their broker. Knots. Tarkin instructed the Holonet database to launch a search for Knots, and in moments the hologram of a silver-haired human with a deeply lined face was rotating in place above the projector. Knots had a world-weary look Tarkin associated with veteran soldiers who had seen more than their share of tragedy. Extracting the holo image, he saved it off to one side of the table and regarded it in silence while machines hummed, chirped, and beeped around him. What he read in the concise précis accompanying the holo image supported the fact that Knots had resided on Lantilles for some 15 years. Digging a bit deeper, Tarkin was able to retrieve Knots's documents of incorporation, his Republic and Imperial tax records, court proceedings of his divorce agreement, even images of the modest apartment he owned on Lantilles. Native to the core, he had relocated to the Outer Rim and established himself as a middleman, bringing clients in want of goods or services together with groups of freelance spacers who could fulfill those needs. He was something of a dispatcher and an agent, taking what struck Tarkin as a fair credit percentage on each transaction. The eyes-only Coruscant databases, which Tarkin hadn't had reason to access since his days as Adjutant General of the Republic Navy, provided a more complete and compelling portrait of Knots. Yes, for 15 years he had operated a profitable, if minor, Outer Rim enterprise. But during the Clone Wars, he had also functioned as a subcontractor for Republic Intelligence, responsible for the covert transport of arms and other materials to resistance groups operating on Separatist-occupied worlds, one of which happened to figure prominently in Tarkin's past as well. The Midrim Moon, Antar 4. Tarkin sat taller on the stool. The discovery of Knots' secret past stirred a memory of the excitement he had felt on the plateau when encountering a sudden, unexpected turn along a game trail. Had his quarry gotten wind of him? Had a different threat presented itself? Was his prey keen on reversing the situation by circling behind to stalk him in his own tracks? Antar IV had been a member of the Republic almost from its inception, but the secessionist movement that preceded the Clone Wars had created a schism among the moon's indigenous humanoid Gotals and given rise to terrorist groups aligned with the Separatists. Shored up by the Republic, Gotal loyalists had managed to retain power until shortly after the Battle of Geonosis, when the moon had fallen to Separatist forces and, for a brief period, become a headquarters for Count Dooku. Tens of millions of Gotal refugees had fled to their colony world, Atzeri, replaced on Antar IV by an influx of Kurovar, Gossams, and other species whose homeworlds had joined the CIS. As a result, the moon became a political imbroglio and had spawned one of the first resistance groups, made up of loyalist Kurovar and Gotals, whom the Republic supported with tactical advisors and secret shipments of arms and materiel. Though the resistance was successful in carrying out hundreds of acts of sabotage, the moon remained in the grip of the Separatists for the length of the war. Tarkin recalled the Kurovar captain's words to Vader. Not all of us were Separatists. With the deaths of Dooku and the Separatist leadership, and the deactivation of the droid army, Antar IV, like many CIS worlds, had soon found itself in the Empire's crosshairs. More to the point, in the crosshairs of Moff Tarkin, who had been given imperial orders to make an example of the moon. No attempt was to be made at repatriation, nor was Tarkin to waste time sorting the separatists from those resistance fighters and intelligence operatives waiting to be exfiltrated to safety. Compnor did its best to cover up the fact that many Korovar and Gotha loyalists had been swept up in the arrests, executions, and massacres, but the media eventually got hold of the story, and for a while, the Antar atrocity had become a celebrated cause in the Corps. This despite the swift disappearances of many beings who had attached themselves to reporting on the story. Instead, the disappearances so fueled the public's hunger for details that the Emperor decided to remove Tarkin from the controversy by assigning him to pacification operations in the Western Reaches, and had ultimately installed him as commander of the bases servicing the Deep Space Mobile Battle Station project, replacing Vice Admiral Rancid, who was reassigned to Naval Intelligence. In thinking back to that period, some 4 years earlier, Tarkin recalled the case of two Coruscanti journalists who had risen briefly to the forefront among a host of anti-imperial irritants. A quick search of the Holonet archives conjured their holograms, which Tarkin placed above the table alongside that of Knott's. In the Coruscant database, Tarkin located intelligence reports detailing their activities. An attractive, dark-skinned human woman with blue-gray eyes, Anora Fair, had been the most vocal and volatile of the core media correspondents who had fixated on the events at Antar. An ambitious journalist, Fair had already attracted attention for her probing interviews with Imperial officials and her editorials critical of Imperial policy, as well as of the Emperor himself. Her unrelenting reports on the Antar atrocity had been brought to life with holographic recreations of arrests and executions, produced and directed by a rubicund Zygerian female named Hask Taff, whom many a pro-imperial pundit had deemed a master of holonet manipulation. It was clear to Compnor that the two of them knew more than they could possibly have known without the help of an intelligence community insider. And suspicions at the time had focused on a disaffected former Republic Station chief named Birch Teller. A Holonet archive search for Teller came up empty, but an access-restricted database search returned a decade-old image of a rangy, dark-haired human with thick eyebrows and a cleft chin. Extracting the hologram, Tarkin placed it alongside those of Anora Fair and Hask Taff, then changed his mind and moved Teller's hologram to the center, with Knott's, the broker, to one side, and the two media professionals on the other. Tarkin contemplated the arrangement and was pleased. With each new set of prints, the trail was beginning to surrender its secrets. Captain Teller's intelligence network resume indicated a long and distinguished career. Early in the Clone Wars, Teller had been involved in covert operations on a host of separatist worlds. That, however, paled in comparison with the fact that Teller had been one of the intelligence officers who had debriefed Tarkin following his rescue and escape from the Citadel with the plans to a secret hyperspace route into separatist space. He and Teller had history. And there was more. Assigned to Antar IV in the war's final year, Captain Teller had helped train and organize Gotal and Korovar partisans into well-armed resistance groups, which had carried out raids, destroyed armories and spaceports, and generally made a nuisance of themselves for the governing separatists. Sensing what was in store for Antar IV after the war's abrupt conclusion, Teller had appealed to his superiors in the intelligence agencies to arrange for the extraction of his principal assets before Tarkin could bring the hammer down on the moon. Republic intelligence had tried to provide aid in the form of documentation and transport, but Compnor, by then on the rise in the Imperial hegemony, had refused to intervene, and so many of Teller's operatives, despite their long-standing loyalty to the Republic, had been arrested and executed. The Imperial directive to make an example of the moon had made perfect sense to Tarkin at the time. He wasn't a retributionist. It was simply that separating friend from foe would undoubtedly have allowed many separatists to flee into hiding. Eliminating them en masse on Antar 4 was preferable to having to hunt them down later in whatever remote regions they found shelter. His actions had conveyed a message to other former CIS worlds that defeat didn't grant them absolution for their crimes, or assure them that the Empire was ready to welcome them back into the fold with open arms. The message had to be made clear to Raxus, Kuriva, Mirkana, and the rest. Surrender all former separatists, or suffer the same fate as the population of the Gotal Moon. Still, Tarkin could see how a Republic officer like Teller might feel betrayed to the point where he would attempt to wage a campaign of revenge against all odds. The military was filled with those who refused to accept that collateral damage was acceptable when it served to further the Imperial cause. In the absence of order, there was only chaos. Did Teller expect an apology from the Emperor? Compensation for the families of those who had been unjustly executed? It was witless thinking. Multiply Teller by 1 billion or 10 billion beings, however, and the Empire could face a serious problem. He continued to peruse Teller's resume, wading through the dense text that scrolled in midair in front of his eyes. By the time Teller had made his appeal to his intelligence chiefs, he had already been reassigned to head up security at... Tarkin stared at the words. Desolation Station. The clandestine outpost responsible for overseeing much of the research for the deep space battle station. But Teller wasn't there for long. He had vanished shortly after the events at Antar 4 and hadn't been seen since. Some in military intelligence believed that he had been assassinated by Compnor agents, but others were convinced that it was Teller who had not only fed information about Antar 4 to Honora Fair and Hask Taff, but also been instrumental in spiriting the media partners to safety hours before they were to have been disappeared by Compnor. Tarkin eased off the castered stool and began to pace the length of the massive table, all the while regarding the four projected holo images. Was it possible that some, or all of them, were involved in the pirating of the Carrion Spike? He stopped to mull it over and shook his head. The odds were good that Teller and Knotts knew each other, in that they had answered the same case officer at Republic Intelligence. Also that Teller had approached the journalists with his story. But none of the four was a starship pilot, much less an engineer capable of managing the Corvette's sophisticated instruments and systems. Returning to the stool, Tarkin resummoned the lengthy file devoted to Antar 4. The Republic databases were difficult to navigate, as much of the information had been deleted or redacted, or was in the process of being altered and reinterpreted. Once he had successfully wormed his way into the appropriate archives, however, he was able to narrow the parameters of his search for Republic assets associated with the Resistance. Ultimately, the distant computers provided the names of several of Teller's partisan subordinates who had escaped execution on the moon and were at least worthy of consideration. There was, for example, a Gotal starship pilot, identified in the archives only as Salik, and a Korivar munitions and surveillance expert listed only as Kala. Tarkin extracted holo images of a twin-horned humanoid and a single-horned near-human, and placed them on the far side of the holograms of Fair and Taff. Then, changing his mind, he moved them to float between those of Teller and Knotts. A tremor of excitement coursed through him. He propelled the custard stool to the holonet array and contacted the escort carrier, Goliath, ordering the specialist he eventually spoke with to forward from the ship's database a record of his transmission with the Findian administrator of the fuel tanker. When the recording arrived, he extracted the image of the scar-faced, red-haired human who had requisitioned fuel cells and ordered the computer to compare the hologram of Teller to the bogus Imperial commander with the ocular implant. In short order, text flashed above the holotable between the two holograms. Match. 99.9%. Tarkin's jaw fell open in wonder as he stared at the man who had stolen his ship. Shifting his gaze between his dictated text and the holograms of the suspects, he began to think through everything from scratch. Yes, Teller could have learned about the carrion spike during his short tenure at Desolation Station, and it would have been easy enough for him to persuade Salek and Carla to join him, since he had probably been responsible for exfiltrating them from Antar IV. Just as he'd been responsible for saving the lives of Feyre and Taff by whisking them from Coruscant. At that point, Teller would have had a pilot, an operations and munitions specialist, and two holonet experts. Tarkin ran a hand down over his mouth and took hold of his chin. Something was missing. Someone was missing. He re-entered the top-secret database to scan the few reports he could access relating to Desolation Station. Teller wasn't the only being who had disappeared from the secret facility. Motivated by grievances against the Empire, many had fled and become fugitives. The count was so high, in fact, that Compnor had compiled a most wanted list of missing scientists and technicians who had held high-priority security clearances. The disappearances were often offered up as an explanation for harassment attacks against Imperial bases and installations. Tarkin scrolled through the list several times, returning after each read-through to a Mon Cal Starship Systems engineer named Artos, who had gone missing shortly after Teller. Dr. Artos, as he was apparently affectionately known, was a former member of the Mon Cal Knights, a group that had fought against his planet's separatist-aligned quorum. Artos certainly would have known about the carrion spike, as parts for the Corvette's Stygian Crystal Stealth System had been manufactured at Mon Cal shipyards after the concept design team had given up on attempts to utilize hybridium. Tarkin blinked, rubbed his eyes, and stared at the mid-air holograms. What about Brachia, the Korovar asset on Mercana? Was he involved in the plot, despite the part he had played in procuring a replacement starship? Were the Crimora crime families involved? What about the crew of the freighter Reticent? Had they perhaps been aboard the cobbled-together warship that had attacked Sentinel Base? Then there was the matter of the warship itself. Who had funded the purchase of the modules, droids, and starfighters? Where and by whom had the ship been assembled? Just how wide-reaching was the conspiracy? Did it involve only former Republic intelligence operatives, or did it penetrate Imperial agencies as well?
Sentients, like animals, have their fussy behaviors, Jova would say. Learn the particulars of one, and you begin to understand the entire species.
If Tarkin's hypothesis about Antar IV being the nexus of the conspiracy was correct, could the involvement of the Reticent's crew owe to something as simple as having lost friends or relatives to the mass executions? Relatives who were perhaps affiliated with Teller's partisans? Tarkin continued to scan the 3D images. If he was right, and he was actually looking at those who had stolen his ship and discovered how to replicate the Clone Wars shadow feeds, then as it happened, they were not former separatists nursing a grudge against the Empire, but rather former Republican loyalists with a vendetta. Supreme Chancellor Palpatine's one-time allies had become the Emperor's new foes. Saving his research to an encrypted file, Tarkin thought,
"The trail continues beyond where you lose it."
Were the dissidents leading him on a chase calculated to disguise their actual objective? The thread that had begun to unspool at Sentinel Base could end at only one point. The carrion spike stumbled out of hyperspace to an interstellar reversion point 10 parsecs from Noaine. The near miss at the autonomous region had left the Corvette so rattled that for a long while, the damaged navicomputer couldn't even establish where the ship was. It was easier now to list the instruments that were still functioning than those that were damaged beyond repair.
We have 2 forward laser cannons and 1 starboard battery,
Carla reported to the others in the Corvette's main cabin, where Artos was tending to Sarek's facial injuries.
Shields are down to nothing. Hull armor's the only thing protecting us from a collision with space dust. Hyperdrive motivator is marginal, but probably good for 1, possibly 2 more jumps.
1 is all we need,
Teller said, while the ship groaned like a wounded animal and Sarek's shed fur wafted in all directions.
Stealth systems and sublight drives are hit or miss,
the Kurovar continued.
Same with communications and the holonet.
Hask gave her pert-eared head a woeful shake.
We don't come off very well in the vids the Empire released of the Noyan engagement.
There'll go our ratings,
Arto said. Anora scowled at him and threw Teller a peeved look.
So much for trusting your ally to hold up his end of the bargain.
I said I trusted him up to a point, Teller shot back. If I trusted him entirely, we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
The remark was not an exaggeration. Had the Carrion Spike decanted in the Noen system at the anticipated reversion point, she would have been instantly annihilated by Imperial fire. Instead, Teller had had Sarek decant the ship deeper in-system, as far from the capital ships as was feasible. Regardless, they had been forced to make a run for it without firing a beam at the star system's Imperial facility, its inconsequence notwithstanding. Boxed in and pounded by laser fire, they had jumped to light speed with a maneuver that in itself had been no mean feat.
Besides, Teller went on, he had to make it look real.
Anora loosed a bitter laugh.
They weren't just making it look real, Teller. Face facts, we've been betrayed.
Teller snorted a bitter laugh.
Probably. But in the end, it won't matter.
He looked at Sarek, then Artos.
Is he going to be all right, Doc?
I'll live,
Sarek said for himself, at least for long enough to finish this.
The autopilot also survived,
Carla said. Teller blew out his breath and nodded.
Then we're good to go on that score. Plus, we've been assured of clear skies.
As long as he's still convinced we're on our way,
Anora said. Teller nodded.
The Carrion Spike will arrive on schedule.
You realize that the Empire won't rest until we're found and dealt with,
Artos said. Hask glanced around.
Assuming anyone's figured out who we are.
I wouldn't put it past Tarkin and Vader. Not with the reticent crew in hand.
Teller compressed his lips.
Even if not, we'll be given up at some point.
Carla grinned.
Fortunately, we've all grown accustomed to looking over our shoulders.
Chapter 20. The Carrion Spike.
On the command walkway of the Executrix, Tarkin waited for Vader to conclude a private holocommunication with the Emperor.
Vice Admiral Rancic is convinced that the dissidents intend to attack the Imperial Academy at Carida, martyring themselves in the process,
Vader said when he emerged from one of the data pits.
The Vice Admiral has been given permission to redeploy as many vessels as he sees fit, and he himself will be commanding all elements of the task force.
Tarkin scoffed. The dissident's last stand.
Someone's last stand,
Vader said.
The Emperor has given careful thought to your premise that his one-time allies have now become his foes.
I'm relieved to hear that, Lord Vader. Then we three are in agreement? Vader nodded solemnly.
We are.
Tarkin smiled in a self-satisfied way. A shuttle is waiting to take you to the frigate.
Vader nodded again and started to move off, only to stop and turn back to Tarkin.
Tell me, Governor Tarkin, why did you choose to name the Corvette the Carrion Spike?
Tarkin allowed his surprise to show.
This ship is named for a unique geographic feature on Iriadu, Lord Vader.
When he realized that Vader was waiting for a more complete explanation, he said, "Allow me to accompany you to the shuttle bay." As they set off side by side, Tarkin began to tell Vader